Hey everyone, welcome to True Crime Predators with me, your host, Kathy Cassidy. I am a licensed clinical forensic therapist. Today we're going to talk about one of the most craziest, twisty, and turny crimes that I've heard of to this day. So this was during my time when I worked for the parole division. For the Department of Corrections, okay? So my job was called a sex offender therapist. So it was only a male population, so all men, and they were court ordered, they were mandated to sex offender specific therapy, which is done only in a group setting for the most part. Okay, so these guys that I was working with, they have been to trial or taken a plea, they've been found guilty, they've served a time sentence in prison, and now they've met whatever criteria to get out of prison on parole. And when they're on parole, that does not mean they're free by any means. They have somewhat more freedom than when they're incarcerated, but it's different kind of restrictions. Excuse me. Sorry. So parole means that they have a parole agent. And for these particular sex offenders, they have a sex offender specific parole agent. So those agents typically have a different training than regular parole agents. And from my experience, the ones that I worked with, they were mostly men, but there were a couple women, and they were just amazing, awesome, phenomenal. And this story is a great example of how awesome this offender's parole agent was. I loved him. He was awesome. I loved all of them. They were just so good at their jobs, and they weren't on power trips. They were just like about the community and really about making sure the offenders were following the conditions of their parole. The conditions are typically set, well, they are set by the court, and sometimes they use like a template, like none of them can use drugs or alcohol at the time, no internet, no pornography. So that's like standard for all of them. And then there's a few other things like, you know, how far away they can be from children. Even if their sex crime was against an adult, they're still not allowed near kids. And that used to really irritate the adult rapists because somehow they did feel they were superior to the pedophiles. Believe it or not, there is a hierarchy in the sex offender population. Okay, so, all right, so here we go. So this guy is on parole, and again, at that time, there was obviously no pornography. I'm sure that still stands, and no computers, nothing like that, no electronics. Okay, so the way that sex offender therapy works is we did it, like I said, in a group, and the guys would all line up on the sidewalk. This is in the city of Chicago. They would line up on the sidewalk, and there was this very inconspicuous metal door just on the block, you know, obviously attached to a building, and they would wait at the door, and then when it was exact time for the group, one of us, being the therapist or our boss, who was also amazing, we would go let them in. They would come down to the hell basement, which is where we did therapy. And then there was a room, not to be confused with a lobby, just a room. And in the room was like a 1950s metal desk. And we had a clipboard on it, and they had to sign in. Because there had to be proof that they attended group. Because if they did not attend group, they really faced a very serious possibility of violating their parole and going back to prison. So the courts took sex offender treatment very, very serious, okay? So if, let's say, one of the guys was like going to be late or something happened, they couldn't get there, and it better be very, very serious. They would have to immediately check in with their parole agent as soon as possible because they're all on GPS monitoring systems, so ankle bracelets. So if they're not where they're supposed to be, everything starts, you know, alarms are going off. The GPS monitoring facility is notified. Then the parole agent's notified. And it's a whole system. Then everybody goes looking for them. Okay, so it's really crucial they let them know if the offenders let the parole agent or the GPS monitoring system place know that they're going to be late or they can't make it, and then they need approval. Okay, so here we go to the good guy. The good guy is the main character in this podcast. So they line up. Some of them are a couple minutes later. They go to the end of the line or whatever they do. They have their little system. You definitely notice patterns with each group of offenders. The good guy was always first in line, tip top first, right? Good looking guy, I think, according to like most standards, at least decent looking. Not like I say in the other podcast, he's not missing an eye. He's not wearing a pirate's outfit. He is not looking like he crawled out of the dumpster. Not what, like, I don't know if people still think that about what sex offenders look like, but that's not what they look like. I mean, there are some. There are definitely some that you're like, holy skin fall off my body, scary. Sorry. This guy, he was clean cut. He was like 5'10"-ish. He was Hispanic, so he had like really dark hair, very symmetrical face. He wore like, his clothes were always clean. He just wore like jeans and a t-shirt, kind of just looked like a dad. Decent, like normal build, like not fat, not skinny, just medium. But I would say his face was like kind of, his bone structure was a little like strong. Okay, so he had like a very kind of alpha type presence, the voice, just the way he carried himself. So he's always first, always on time. He had already been a parolee at the parole division when I started working there. So he was there. So, you know, this guy also was extremely arrogant. Like when he spoke, he was the guy in group that was always like, I don't think the other guys liked him, even though they all tried to stick together. They thought it was like them against us, which it kind of was, but that's not how it's supposed to be. I didn't really like that divide, but it needed to be there for many reasons. So he would be the guy in group that if anyone was sharing about, you know, maybe a temptation they had, maybe they did something that could put their freedom at risk, this guy was first to speak up, confront them, and his big thing was always like, why would you do that? Like, why would you even tempt your freedom? Like, follow the rules. It's not that hard. And do what you have to do. You know what it is. And he was on everybody. So I really think the guys didn't like him. Most people wouldn't like him in that kind of setting, because he was like Mr. Good Guy. He really was. Okay. So one day, and as I have told you guys, but I'll just say it in every podcast, part of sex offender therapy is similar to AA in that, let me shut that off, in that they have to tell their crime from like beginning to end. And same as like AA, how they have to tell how the startup went, all the buildup, all of that. So very similar in that regard. Like we have their records from prison, from police, from victim statements, all sorts of any records that there are, we would have them at the parole division. Okay. So that allowed us to like match up what they were saying to see if they were telling the truth. They knew we had them, and so part of their treatment was to tell every single thing from the time they got the idea to commit the crime, when they started fantasizing about it, how they planned it, who their victim was, why they chose that victim, and then every single gruesome detail of their crime, their prison sentence, or I mean their court stuff, their prison sentence, all the way to the day they're sitting in front of you. And I mean thorough. So if it wasn't right, or they lied or minimized, which they were not allowed to do ever, they weren't allowed to use the word just, like I, or only, like I just, you know, did this, or I only touched him or her in that place, that was forbidden. So they would have to tell every single thing, like I said. So for us, you know, I guess it's, some point, I don't know if I got used to it. You're hearing every single brain movement as honest as they can be from beginning to end. And, you know, it's like walking through a poltergeist hell tunnel, listening to all of this. And as non-predators, you know, you're just, like I've said, like your jaw is below ground, dropped. Like, who the hell even thinks of doing these things? I mean, the things are so sadistic and so crazy and bizarre, and their thinking patterns, which we call like thinking errors, are profound. So you're just, for me as like a newbie, you're just like, your eyes just feel like they're broken. Like your ears feel like they're morphing into your head. It's just so crazy. I mean, you do adjust and you do adapt. And I'll explain that in another podcast, how that happened for me at least. So, all right. So it's the good guy's turn to do his introduction. And that's what it's called, that when they have to start from the beginning to the end. So it's the good guy's turn. And I'm like so curious about the good guy. Like, what did he do, Mr., you know, rule follower? What is his sex crime? Nothing could have prepared me for any of the guys, really. Like, don't get that wrong. They all, you know, made me like think 50 times over again. But this guy in particular, this was crazy. All right. So he was married. He had 3 kids. And they were teenagers. And okay, so he has 2 daughters and a son. And, you know, they're living in the city of Chicago in an apartment. And one day, you know, he's home and his wife and one of his daughters. And he kind of hears his wife and the daughter kind of whispering in the other room. Well, that infuriated him, which was strange to me. Like, why is that so infuriating? I mean, to the level he took it, it's like insane. So he's infuriated and he's like, why are they not including me? You know, he's the man of the house and he's the man, like top tier alpha family man, dad guy, boss man. How dare they exclude him from any information? So next day, same thing is happening. Same thing. They're like kind of whispering. He's getting this feeling like, what is going on? He's mad. So he confronts them. And he's like, what are you guys whispering about? You know, and he's not being nice. He's yelling like, something's going on. I don't like, you know, you guys like disrespecting me, not telling me what's going on. So the wife says to him in front of the daughter, our daughter's pregnant. This guy flipped his lid. I mean, flipped. Not, this is important, not because his daughter was pregnant, because she was like 15, 16. He wasn't mad about that. He was mad that they didn't tell him and they were excluding him. And the boss man didn't know everything going on in the house the minute it happened. Or people didn't go to him for his worldly advice. So he's furious. Furious. What does he do? Like nobody else would do. He storms out of the house, gets in the car, and goes trolling down the street. They lived somewhat near a high school, and he is driving down the street, and he sees a girl about 15, 16. She had her backpack on. He knew she was, you know, more than likely from the high school. He knew she was a teenager, and he knew she was under the age of 18 because he could tell by the way she was dressed and looked in her backpack, the things that indicate youth. That a lot of sex offenders try to pretend like they didn't know, but there's a lot of giveaways how old somebody is, at least under or over 18, that most people can guess using common sense. So he knew she was a minor. So he pulls over and he's talking to her through the passenger's window. And somehow he could be very charismatic when he wanted to be. So he's talking to the girl and I don't know what he said to her. I don't remember. Somehow, he had to tell us, but I honestly don't remember. He charmed this girl into getting into the front seat of his car and giving her a ride home. So she gets in, they take off, and you guys know, he did not take her home. He pulled into an alley, and alleys are like every block in the city. They're everywhere. It's not like an uncommon thing. They're everywhere. So mind you, it is broad daylight. It is like right after school-ish, so maybe 3 o'clock around then. Broad daylight. Turns into an alley. Puts the girl in the back seat. Makes her get back there. He goes to the back seat. And he violently beats this girl. This little girl. And he violently rapes this little girl. And then he opens the back door and dumps her body out into the alley. I mean, I'm just like, oh my gosh. And then he goes home. Next day, same thing. Same exact thing. Driving down the same street, sees another girl around the same age. Does the same thing. Rolls down the windows, talking to her. She's conversing, so he charms her into the car as well. Same reason, gives her a ride home. Same thing. Turns down an alley, different alley, because he thinks he's, you know, smarting the system. He doesn't want to go down the same alley. Goes down the alley, same time of day, same. Creatures of habit. This is how we can study them. They just are creatures of habit. Goes down the alley, pulls over, makes her climb over the seat. This is like an old car where it's like a, you know, a bench kind of in the front seat. Shoves her over the back. He goes in the back as well. This time he not only vaginally rapes her, but he also anally rapes this girl. So she's victim number 2. Beats the holy mother of Mary out of this child. Same thing. Opens the back door, dumps her out in the alley, and goes home. Now this time, the second one, the second day, second victim, second day, he's nervous. Now he's like, okay, that's two girls, like same area. I shouldn't have done that. It's like, I can easily get caught like this. So he's like, he started listening to the news. He started keeping the blinds closed. He called off work for a few days. He wants to lay low. I don't know if the family noticed. I have no idea. I would probably notice if my husband was like crawling around and doing army crawls through the house to avoid the windows, but who knows? Okay, so he's hiding, listening to the news, not hearing anything. So a few days go by. He's like, all right, I guess I'm good. Like, I don't hear anything. So back to work, slowly starts opening the blinds. Back out in the neighborhood. And also part of this is he is like the neighborhood dad. Like they all get together on the sidewalk, backyards, and they hang out. They barbecue. Everybody really likes this guy. He is, like I said, a strong personality. So people go to him for things. The men all like him. The wives like him. The kids like him. Like he's very well liked. In an alpha way. Not like in a sweet, nice guy. Like in the guy you go to, you know, you look to if you need something, you look to lead the crowd, that guy. So he's back out in the neighborhood living life, thinking like, I got away with this. Okay. Time goes by, fast forward a few months, say, I don't know how long it was. Just say it was a few months. It wasn't that long. A few months go by. His son comes to the good guy and his good wife, we'll call her the good wife. He goes to them and he says, you know, you guys, I have a girlfriend and it's getting serious and I want you guys to meet her. I want to see what you think of her. So, you know, the mother's all excited, the good wife, she's excited. She's like, oh, good, we want to meet her, you know, all this. He's like, yeah, you know, I guess we can meet her. Let's set up a dinner. Of course, he's setting the plans because he's the boss. Let's set up a dinner, have her over Friday night. We'll all get together with the siblings too. And we'll have a nice dinner. I'll meet her. Okay. Friday comes. Everybody's ready. The mom's been cooking. She's excited. Everybody's waiting for her. So the doorbell rings. And of course, you know, Alpha has to answer the door because he's the man of the house. So Alpha, the good guy, opens the door And who is standing in front of him? Victim number two. The girl, the second girl that he raped, vaginally and anally, beat to a pulp and threw on the ground in the alley. He said he thought his heart was going to come out of his rump. He was like, oh my gosh. At that very moment, the son comes up and he's like, hey, whatever her name is, you know, this is my dad and this is Mr. Good Guy Dad. And she's like, oh, hi, nice to meet you. You know, shakes his hand, comes in, introduces her to everybody. He's standing at the door like, what in the hell is going on? He's like, she must not remember me. Like, how is this possible? Goes in the kitchen. Sorry, you guys. Goes in the kitchen and he's like, you know, everybody introduces each other. They sit down, they have dinner. He's like freaking out, you know, how does this girl not remember me? But she's just talking, going along with conversation. Everybody's getting along great. It's good, you know, the son is happy. Everybody's good. After dinner, they all clean up. They go sit in the living room and they're talking, all of them. And then the girlfriend says, oh, my mom's here. I have to go. Now, she hadn't let anybody know that she was leaving, and at least that he knew of. So he's like, oh, all right, you know, so soon. She's like, yeah, it was nice meeting all of you. She leaves. Then she gets in the car with her mom. And we know this from all of the outside information. She tells the mom, she's like, oh my gosh, mom, you know, basically, I don't know her exact words, but the guy who raped me, that was him. That's my boyfriend's dad. So that's how he got caught. I mean, so they immediately go to the police. They arrest him. He goes through all the proceedings, whatever, ends up being found guilty and goes to prison for 5 to 7 years. I don't remember. Something like that, in that ballpark. And then he meets the criteria for parole after he does whatever time that he needs to. And then now he's sitting here with us in sex offender therapy. So this, I'm just sitting there like, this sounds like a movie. Like, this is crazy. I mean, you guys, the city of Chicago is very big. Now, granted, he was in his neighborhood, you know, trolling for victims. He says he wasn't, but he was. But you guys have to know, like, Chicago public schools, high schools are huge. There's, like, thousands of kids there. The likelihood of that being his son's girlfriend at that moment in time, that day, everything right after the sex crime is just, it's just like a 1 in a million chance, in my opinion. So this little girl, this is what I'm thinking. How did this child get, like, imagine how she felt when he opened the door, and how did she keep her cool and stay collected to sit through that whole dinner, shake this guy's hand, eat dinner with him, talk to him, his family, and hold all of that together until she got in the car with her mom. Like, I don't know. Something was carrying her I just don't know. It's like such a blessing the way she did that. And oh my gosh, I cannot even imagine this poor child's brain. And just like all the, I don't even know, all the everything positive sent to her for having the courage to do what she did, to get through that, to get this guy caught, to not get anybody else hurt by, I don't know, it's just like so amazing, because she could have like started screaming and running and then he could have chased her or hurt the family. That's what I mean by more people getting hurt. She did amazing, to say the least. There's just no words really for what she was able to do. So, okay, back to therapy. So now we're doing our sex offender therapy. He's doing finishes his introduction. I have no blood in my body. I'm just sitting there like a saggy bag of bones, freaking out inside. Of course, you know, you have to sit with your therapist's face and, okay, yeah, and you ask questions. But inside, I'm like, how is this possible? How is this even a true story? Okay, so we get through that. Weeks go by, you know, every offender that tells their crime from start to end is just mind-blowing. Okay, one day, time for group, go upstairs. I go upstairs, unlock the door to the basement of hell. The good guy's not first in line. I definitely notice. I'm like, that's weird. So everybody, I go downstairs first. They all come down after me, which I didn't like that setup because I didn't like them behind me, but that's how it was. They come down and I'm like, where's the good guy? And everybody's like, all the guys, because they all know each other. They've been in group for a long time together. They're like, I don't know. We didn't see him. And I'm like, that's so weird. He's not here. So I wait a second, like, no way. Like, where is he? Everybody gets checked in. He's still not there. So I tell my boss, I'm like, the good guy's not here. He's like, all right, call his agent, see what's going on. So I call his agent. He's like, oh, the good guy is in jail. I'm like, what? The good guy? He's like, yep. Over the weekend, his parole agent, who was stellar, by the way, he did his unexpected, unplanned pop-up at the good guy's house, which is standard procedure. Goes in. He said, I don't know, I just was feeling like I need to check out a little more today. Just a feeling based on nothing in particular other than the population we work with. And he tells the good guy, let me go check your attic. And the good guy's like, why? Why do you want to check my attic? Like, it's just dirty and gross up there. And there's nothing up there. He's like, open the attic. So he drops down the attic. The stairs come down. This big, I mean, these parole guys, most of them were huge men. Like, big, big man. His big self, he climbs up that ladder. And what does he see? About 5 or 6 hard drives. He's like, oh, no. Because, you guys, something about, I would say pedophiles in particular, I haven't noticed it with adult rapists, but I've mostly worked with pedophiles for some reason. They love the hard drives. They don't get rid of them. They fill them up with child porn, child images, everything horrifying, and they save them. And there's tons of hard drives. So, of course, the agent knows. Like, you know, these hard drives are not just sitting up here in the musky old dirty attic for nothing. So they pop them out. They do whatever they do. I don't know what they do and how they do it. All of the drives are filled with child porn. So not only is that a horrific crime in itself, a separate crime, but he also violated his parole for having computers, which sounds minor, but they have to do things in a certain way. So he got violated and he committed new crimes and he went back to jail and he was sentenced. He violated, so he went back on his violation. And I don't know what the sentence was for the new crime or how they did that. And this is part of my work, you guys, and anybody who works in my field. In this kind of setting, we don't always know what happens. And like my sister always asks me, like, don't you wonder? Don't you want to know? Sometimes you do, but everything is moving so fast. So many new people, so many new things, new horrors, new things you have to address that, like, you don't either you think of it and it passes really quickly through your brain, or you don't have time to do it. You're like, oh, I wonder what happened to him. And sometimes it's like still in legal proceedings. So if you did check, like, nothing's really moving. So honestly, I don't know how much time he got for that. Or what happened, but I do know he was violated and I do know he was charged with the new child pornography crime. So that is the case of the good guy. Isn't that crazy? I mean, crazy. And you guys know, said it in the beginning, say it again. Everything is like mixed up a bit to protect the privacy, but not so much that I still capture the high majority of the crime, but it's just not identifiable by certain little things. So that is the case. Yeah, and to this day, that was in 2010. It is 2024. I still remember almost every single detail of it. I can picture the day, the setting, the chairs. I can picture me calling the pro. I remember every bit of that. I remember it just like stamped in my brain. Just so insane. So, all right, guys, thank you for joining me for this podcast. And if you find this helpful in any way or interesting in any way, or you think it could benefit someone by listening to it, please share it. And please rate the podcast if you like it. If you don't like it, don't rate it. Okay. Don't bring me down. Don't bring me down. All right, you guys, be safe. Stay aware. Trust your instinct. Have a great day. I'll see you in the next podcast.